back. A popular the man.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Sauce in my bag. Swag.
Ooh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Queen Talk. It's Kayla again, and I have some lovely guests with me. Just to remind you what Queen Talk is, this is a space for women and women-identified individuals to speak their truth and be their holistic selves. And tonight we're going to be having some discussion surrounding our experiences as Black and Brown women growing up and or living in Portland or Oregon. So let me just start with my guests introducing themselves. We'll start to the right.
Hi, my name's Vanessa. I'm 23 and I've lived in Portland basically my whole life. My racial identity is a little bit interesting. I always tell people that my dad is Black. I'm really I'm very light skinned, so I've had a little bit of trouble like really owning my Blackness, because I've, you know, people don't look at me and see a Black woman, but now I am married to a Mexican man and I have three children who are, you know, very visibly brown, and I think that that has helped me to really own my own racial identity.
Cool, thank you.
Well, hi, my name's Maya, and I'm 22 years old, and I've lived in Portland, Oregon for pretty much all my life as well, and I do identify myself as a Black female, and yeah.
Hi, everyone. I'm Simone Reynolds. I'm 22 years old, and I identify as biracial, white, and Black, and I've lived in Portland, Oregon since I was about 19 years old, and I now live in San Francisco.
Hi, everyone. My name is Alicia Overton. I'm 22 years old. I identify as, I'm from Portland, born and raised. And I identify as biracial, Black and Peruvian.
See, I have like the coolest people in here right now. Okay, so before we get started, I just want to bring up some Black Girl Magic, a current event. So Issa Rae, if you all know who that is, Issa Rae, yeah, is the creator and star of Insecure, on HBO, which is a great show if you haven't seen it.
Snaps to her.
Yeah, I would say check it out. Exactly. So she actually landed two new projects with HBO. So the first show is going to be titled Sweet Life, and it's reportedly about a Black family living and struggling in LA. And then the next show is called Him or Her, and according to Deadline, Him or Her will follow the dating life of a bisexual Black man and the distinctly different worlds and relationships he finds himself in. And this article is from the internet. Right now I don't have the refinery29.com. So if you're interested in either of those shows or checking out Insecure, HBO, you can go on the internet and Google it, and I'm sure you can find that.
Well, it's a summer series, so it'll be out next summer, possibly with season 3.
Oh,
sorry,
really?
I'm an active watcher. Issa Rae, that's the idol.
Okay, yeah. So here you go. You know a little bit more information, but yeah. But those ones, the 1 and 2, should be like on demand or like.
Yeah, it's on like to go. Like, was it HBO Go?
HBO Go.
And,
okay. It's on Xfinity. All that.
Yeah, if you got that good stuff.
You got Xfinity.
For real. Let me use your login.
Right. Mine's about to expire. We need
for real.
That.
Send it. Call us. What's the number?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so Vanessa kind of already started to describing what it's like to be a black or brown woman in her experience here in Portland. So I don't know if you could just run through, like, you know, some everyday experiences, maybe some, like, familial experiences, workplace experiences, and, like, maybe educational and school experiences, if you could do a quick synopsis of those.
A quick synopsis of all of those.
Yeah, every single one.
I mean, it is, like, it's rough being in Portland. There's not, like, Portland is just so white and, like, not great for people of color, especially raising children. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and with all of the Trump stuff happening, you know, my daughter is 8 and she came home from school right after Trump was elected and said that some kid at school told her that he hoped that, like, her whole family got sent back to Mexico.
No.
And, you know, it's like, she's 8. She shouldn't have to deal with that. But I definitely have a different perspective because people don't necessarily recognize me as a person of color. And so I get quite a bit of white privilege that I don't necessarily want. and I don't know that I would necessarily get treated that way if I wasn't in Portland.
Okay. How about you? How do you feel about these four different kind of categories and intersectionalities of your life?
Well, I'm very noticeably black or African-American, team dark skin. it's definitely like I moved out of Portland. I did go to John Ball Elementary, now Rosa Parks Elementary. And I moved to Vancouver, Washington when I was like in third grade. So at that time in Vancouver, it was literally like maybe like 2 black kids to a class. Mm. So talk about culture shock. being like 8 and, you know, 7 years old going into class and like seeing no one like you and like trying to fit in and trying to like change who you are. And especially like your hair. And one day I wear like my little braids with the little barrettes. And the next day I come with my like tree braids and everyone's like, oh my God, how your hair grow overnight? I don't know. I ran into a witch's house or something. Like, I followed the breadcrumbs.
Oh my gosh.
And so like, it's just, I don't know. It's definitely like very gentrified now. It's very like nothing's there anymore. A lot of the black, you know, churches, a lot of the black stores, a lot of the anything pretty much black is pretty much gone, eliminated. So it's crazy, like, growing up and having, like, all these memories and then leaving and then coming back and then seeing it all gone. So
apartment buildings,
yeah,
everywhere.
Exactly, like, these skyscrapers. And it's just, like, I mean, you ain't got no room to breathe. Like, everything's just so high up. And it's just, like, I'm about to start buying air rights in a minute. Like,
air rights.
I think going back to what you said about school, for me, being biracial, you know, I always was like too white and I wasn't mm-hmm. black enough or, mm-hmm. you know, and they're like, okay, so what are you? Like, you're the white girl or you're the Oreo. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I just wanted to be me. And I grew up, you know, like you said, there's only like 2 people of color to a class.
True.
And you noticed it, but it was normal because you grew up in that. And then when I moved to San Francisco for college, I noticed that I was not the only brown person.
Yeah, I was in Concord.
In class. Yeah. And I was like, wow, you know, this diversity, this melting pot, this exists. And I could walk around without being stared at, mm-hmm. without people saying, oh my God, your hair grew overnight if I got my hair done a certain way. But I felt comfortable, and I feel so comfortable being black, and I also feel comfortable being white. And I realized that all colors are beautiful, and I feel like I really need to embrace what we're all given. So whether you're black or you're biracial or you're white, like, we have to embrace that we are all a community as like women too.
Absolutely.
And I'm so tired of being stared at or being criticized because I'm not enough. You know, we all are enough.
Yeah.
I think going off of what Simone says about being you know, the whole being biracial thing, me personally, I look more Hispanic than anything. Anybody?
Yeah.
I know.
That's what I thought at first. I was like,
and it sucks. It really, I love, you know, I love my skin tone. I love who I am. And I think growing up, like, I grew up more with my dad's side of the family, so all my, you know, all my black cousins, and, you know, to me, I thought I was black. I considered myself black enough, but to society itself, I'm not black enough. I don't have everybody's stereotypical characteristics of a black girl. I don't have the nappy hair, or, like, the texture of a black girl, mm-hmm. or I don't have the darker skin, or I don't mm-hmm. speak a certain way mm-hmm. that is acceptable to society as being black. And to me, you know, I feel like nobody should have that, you know, that barrier telling you can't be who you are because of these, like, set, you know.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What is it like, or how has dating a man of color impacted your confidence in being black?
Mm-hmm. I think it helps me feel a little bit more at home, I guess, but when it comes to you know, being from Portland, where they're from the East Coast, and they have a different yeah. experience of what black is compared to the black that I grew up in Portland. Yeah. To me, Portland is black. I don't get, like, I think, to me, because I've never had that opportunity to travel to different areas and see the different types of hood. Mm. To me, North Portland and, like, Northeast Portland are hood. That's hood to me. So, you know, like, when we talk about gangbangers, come here in Portland, yeah. in Philly and over on the East right. Coast, it's a completely different right. experience for them. So down. They're like, yeah. they're looking at us like, no, y'all, you know, like to them, it's different. So for his family, it's, we're not that we're not black, but it's like, mm-hmm. we're more of the Portlandy type of black, you know? I
but
guess
there's
like
levels to it.
There's levels to it, you know? And I mean, it's not necessarily, it's a good thing. I mean, I get a different opportunity to see, like, how they experience everything. But I guess me, you know, I would say, like, I get to see their culture and how they do things differently on the East Coast than we do here. And I guess, I don't know.
Yeah.
I enjoy that opportunity. You know, I've never had that opportunity to be with somebody's family who is fully black and has, you know, a whole different experience than I have. Mm-hmm.
Wait, yeah. So your man, he's from the East Coast?
Yes, he is.
Awesome.
He's from Philly. Yeah, he's from Philly. LA. Philly. That's as East Coast as you can.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, like, well, most of you in here know Tevin, who's my partner. And he's from Oakland. And, like, every day I have to hear, you know, kind of the same sentiment. Like, you know, like.
Yeah.
And just, like, he had a really hard time, like, adjusting to living in Oregon because, you know, the Bay is so diverse, and, like, he never really experienced racism, like, growing up, because he was either, like, the majority or just, it was just a melting pot of people. So, yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that. And I feel like I forgot to talk about myself, which is weird because I love talking about myself. But basically, I'm Kayla, and I identify as biracial. Just to, like, pay respect to my mother because she is white. But, like, every day, you know, I also identify more with, like, just being a black woman just because, like, that's my, like, phenotype. Like, that's what people, like, see on the outside. And that's, like, what all my experiences are shaped by. So, like, even though I am genetically, you know, like, my DNA and everything is, like, you know, I am white. I don't have, like, any experiences being white. As far as, like, class, that's a different story. But basically, just, like, a little bit of background. So my whole entire family that I grew up with my whole life is white. My mom got remarried when I was 2 to a white man, and they had children who are white, who are my siblings. So I've grown up in a whole, like, household full of white people, and there's nothing wrong with that. I love them. They're my family. And but that just made it really hard because, you know, as some of the guests here were sharing, it just took me a while to, like, be comfortable being black. I went to private school. I grew up in Portland my whole life. It's just, like, I kind of had the cards, like, stacked against me. And I feel like at one time, like, I hated being black. I told my mom, like, I wanted to be white. I wanted relaxers. Like, I wanted straight hair. Like, I didn't, you know, like, I just didn't want to be black at all. And so I just feel like, I don't know how I got to this place where I'm like, I'm black and I'm proud and, like, I'm loud, but it's just like,
but that's awesome.
Yeah,
it's that more you got acceptable there. Now you have yeah. everybody just saying black is beautiful, and it yeah. is, and it is black excellence. You see black love. Everybody
finally,
exactly, and it's beautiful to see that we're finally evolving and we're finally showing that, like,
yeah.
we are who we are, and we're not gonna, you know, regardless of how society views us, we're gonna prove to you that we're not. we're not those stereotypes yeah, that we're not.
Exactly. It's so great to finally see those stereotypes being broken and like just everybody coming out and like really like showing who they are.
I just
think it's sad that we have to prove that though. Right. That we have to prove that Black love exists, that Black excellence exists. Exactly. Like that we have to post something on Snapchat or Instagram to see, yes, we are defying the odds. Like it should already be known that Black women, Black men can defy the odds regardless.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's hard when everything's so like whitewashed and it's hard when everything's right. so watered down and everybody's like, I don't know, it's just like it's whenever you say something or however like you retaliate, it's like, oh,
you're Black,
yeah, like, oh, you're racist. Yeah,
that's my favorite one. My favorite comeback is you're pulling the race card. Yeah, it's like, it has nothing to do with it. It's more of, we have more of a
exactly yeah. like I should be able to say how I feel just like you're able to say yeah. how you feel and yeah. nobody's like, oh, he's pulling his white right. privilege
yeah. like, and just kind of like what Kayla's saying about, you know, having Black experiences, we never had to prove that, you know, we are white. We'd always have to prove that we were Black or like
yeah
we would we have down. To almost like do better in life to like prove that we're not what everybody thinks we are.
Well, I think that's why I struggle with my identity so much is because people see me as white, and so I don't want to be like taking away from the Black experience by being like it's like it almost feels like because I don't look Black, it's like I can't own all of the pain and the hardships by presenting myself as Black because it's not fair because I don't get the same treatment that Black people get.
Yeah, but I know your family. I mean, we went to school yeah. together and like, yeah. you know, I know that like some of your siblings look more quote unquote like Black.
Yeah, and my dad, yeah, for sure.
Okay, yeah, your dad. But, like, you know, like, even your brother, like, when he was going to Central, like, I knew when I first saw him, like, he was mixed.
Well, Black people also typically recognize that more easily than yeah, white people, that's I think. And, and so my experience was a little bit backwards from some of you guys. So when I went to elementary school, my brother and I were, like, the only people of color in the entire school.
Where'd you go?
School? Holy Family Catholic School. Like, that's why. Yeah, so I like, you know, I didn't know any Black people other than my family. Like, I just had no experiences with people of color at all of any race. And then I was so proud to be Black. I was like, oh, right. hell yeah. Like, I'm awesome. You know, I have way prettier skin than you guys, which is like, mm-hmm. you know, everybody's beautiful. But as a little kid, I was like, I'm the best. And then I went to high school with Kayla and I saw like, you know, dark skinned Black people. And I like, you know, I marched myself into the African American Student Union and everybody looked at me like, why are you here? And I was yeah. like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
I just want to go off of what you said, you know, about how you said that you were wanting to be white and you told your mom that you wanted to, you know, get yeah. relaxers and everything. For me, it was a complete opposite thing. I wanted to be Black. Like, I wanted yeah. to be more Black. And I still, to this day, I feel like I still struggle with feeling like I'm not Black enough. And I want the curly, perfect hair that
me
everybody
else has. Me too. Like,
I'm
so
sorry. Yeah, I know. Curl. But like no, me, my hair, I have coarse hair and my hair comes out straight, wavy, curly, everything. Like mm-hmm. it's not one texture. Like, you know, it's me not too. One thing. It's like, I want to have those perfect curls and it's like everybody else gets that opportunity. I had it when I was younger and I'm like, can I get those back? But like, you know, for me, it was a completely different thing. I want it. All my friends are Black. I hang around with majority of Black people and it's more of just like a comfort for me so that, yeah. I know that I do fit in regardless. Yeah. I know that I, you know, to some people I don't, but I try to make it, you know, try to be as involved as I can.
Yeah, like I was more on the side of Kayla, like always wanted to do the perms and always mm-hmm. wanted to have my hair straight. And it didn't help that my last name was White. So I always got made fun of. They were like, oh, your last name's White, but you're Black. And I'm like, oh yeah, gosh. Thanks.
Couldn't come up with a better
such joke. Original than that.
Joke. I can definitely relate to, you know, Kayla and Maya. It's like, I felt so like ugly with my hair curly. They'd be like, why is it frizzy? Why is it poofy? You should have hair like mine. You know, I went to Fabian, which is a pretty like diverse elementary school, but still I was made fun of. Yeah. And I got a relaxer one day and I had finally had that straight long hair and everyone complimented me. So I thought that's what beautiful is, right? But then as I got older and my hair has finally grown back, I was like, I ruined my beautiful Black hair, you know. And it's like an insult to my ancestors, to my parents that gave me this naturally beautiful hair. And I went against it. And I said, no, I want to fit in. But it was pain that I had to go through, burning my scalp, mm-hmm. you know.
With cancerous chemicals.
Yeah, like, that literally burns through chicken. Right. Yeah. Like,
that's crazy. Okay, well, I want to, if anyone's listening, I just want to open the lines up really quick for callers to call in with experiences they have had with being a black or brown female identified individual in Portland, Oregon, or like any questions that are appropriate. For any of the guests, like, on their experiences that they've shared. So the number to call is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And Del will patch you through if you call, and we can get you on the air. And you can ask us your questions or give us your feedback as long as it's appropriate. I just you have to be appropriate about yeah. every time.
Underline bold word.
Yeah. But I think what was I going to comment on that you were just talking about? I think that, like, you know, we're all talking about hair and everything like that. I feel like right now is a great time to be black.
Yes.
Because it's, you know, we got the black excellence. We got the black girl magic. We got, you know, black love. And it's kind of all, like, going mainstream, and, you know, that's thanks to people like Issa Rae and, like, you know, people like Colin Kaepernick and, yes, you know, many Colin. More that aren't, like, celebrities. So don't just think I'm just naming celebrities. That's the first people that came to my head. But I just think it's so interesting because, like, we're all different shades in this room, but it's just funny. The hair thing really gets me because it's, like Alicia said, like, I really want the perfect, like, curls but not frizzy but like perfect curls, and it's like that's a hybrid human. Like, I think people need to understand that, like, that's not normally like hair. That's not normally anyone's hair. Like, you have to use product, you have to right. you know, go through different like treatments like perms and things like that, and like wand it and whatever else. Like, I just feel like it's really commercialized now, and I feel like yeah. it's just another way to kind of get us to feel like we're not.
I feel like the media ruined yeah. that for us.
My sister-in-law, though, is one of those hybrid humans.
Oh, okay.
She has the best hair of all time.
Your sister-in-law?
Yes. Did you use those products that I told you about?
Okay,
have
no.
you seen them?
I didn't.
Okay.
Yet. Okay, I will.
I'm going to show you pictures of her. She has the best hair I've ever seen.
Okay, I'm jealous. Can I have some product list?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. We can chat after the show, but we have Ladisha on the phone, so we want to get her on the
air.
Hey. Hey.
Hi.
How's it going, Deesh?
It's going great. Just got off work, cooking dinner, you know.
Well, thank you for listening.
You're yeah. welcome. How to support my best friend and you. I'm so glad seeing you guys doing your things. I know this has like been a dream of Maya's for like ever to be on a radio show. So yeah. super proud
Shout
of you guys had the opportunity.
She bring us dinner.
Do you want to speak about your experience being black in either Oregon or Washington? Or
well, I grew up in Washington, so I went to predominantly white schools, and I was bullied like my whole life. I was too black, too skinny. I didn't fit in with anybody. I tried to I think the third grade at Minnehaha Elementary, I tried to try out for the soccer team and was basically told black kids don't play soccer. You know, like, so I grew up my whole life with self-hate issues because I was told, like, you're not pretty, dark skin's not, you know, it's not a beautiful thing, your hair is nappy. Like, it was just, like, embedded in me, like, as a kid, like, you're just not cute. Like, you're not cute. So I spent all of my middle school and high school years trying to be white, perming my hair, wearing weave. Like, that was just who I was. And I didn't even feel comfortable not having a weave in my hair. Like, I was with somebody for 6 years and I refused to take off my weave in front of him because I was like, oh no, you can't, like, no. Mm-mm. I wasn't even comfortable with being a person. Like, I didn't know who I was because I was so caught up in trying to be something else, because I grew up thinking black people just aren't pretty. Nobody wanted to date me. Like, it, like, growing up in Vancouver was like a harsh thing, like being young and being black, like, you, like, no love, not at all.
That's so true.
Well, thank you for sharing that, first of all. And I just want to ask, and if you're comfortable saying, how did you get through that, or where are you at, you know, right now?
Where I'm at right now is I honestly love being a black woman.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I honestly the idea of somebody who made me feel like being black was like the best thing ever.
Black's
like
beautiful.
Black is beautiful. Like, I'm like, I want to be darker at this point. Like, I just want to be chocolate. Like, I'm just embracing who I am as a black woman, and I couldn't be happier. Like, it just, it took a long time to like find myself and like come to grips with the fact, like, you're black, it's not going anywhere. Like, you'll never be white, you're never gonna be light skinned. Like, you are black, like, you need to love yourself, or, you know, like, it's not gonna be, you're gonna have problems your whole life. And it's been great, honestly.
Yeah, well, I'm happy that you got through that, and I really, again, thank you for calling and supporting your friend and supporting show and, like, sharing your experience, because I know that there's, you know, girls out there and girl-identified people out there that kind of, like, can relate or empathize. So thank you so much for calling in.
No problem. Thank you.
Love you. Love your chocolate cell.
And just to all the girls and girl-identified people out there in general, like, you're all gorgeous. I can just, we just all are. We're all beautiful, and I feel so bad when people hate themselves and, like, think that they can't be themselves in front of other people.
Well, it's like, how do you watch your child suffer like that at a young age?
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can really do about it because it's their pain. And I know you can probably speak to that as a mother of an 8-year-old girl that came home to, you know, hearing what she heard after Trump was elected. But just,
well, luckily I have one of the most confident children of all time. Like, she knows that she's fabulous, which I just love. But I am always making sure to be very specific with the compliments that I give her, so that she is not just hearing, you know, like, the mainstream, oh, you're pretty because you're skinny or whatever. You know, she's a beanpole. But I'm like, I tell her, so my daughter, she is part Asian, and so I'm always telling her, like, that she has the best hair. Like, I make, and, like, that her eyes are gorgeous. Like, I give her specific compliments to kind of fight against the things that I know that she will hear from other people.
I love that. I think my mom did the same thing. She always just told me, you know, gave me specific compliments, letting me know how beautiful I was. And of course, I didn't believe it because I'm stubborn, and you go to school and you get bullied. And, but now I look back and I'm like, I'm a beautiful black woman, and I'm not afraid, you know.
That's awesome.
And I think that we can all say that, I hope, in this room.
Yeah, I know.
That we're unafraid to be beautiful and to be ourselves and to be black.
It took a lot of, like, it's really hard because, like, for, like, the longest time, like, self-esteem issues was, like, really big. So it's, like, now, like, being able to, like, really look in the mirror and, like, and be comfortable with what you see and, like, not, like, try to, like, steer away from it. It's, like, very relieving now to to finally, like, have, you know, just higher self-esteem than, because I'm telling you, like, growing up, it was really hard, like, trying to get over it. I feel like I did move to California, like, Concord area, and I went to Diablo Valley, and it took me, like, even then, I was still, like, being around. It was a total culture shock just being around. It's like, whoa, like, I never knew how many of us were out here. Like, so it's just, like, seeing them, like, even in their natural states. Like, I joined a PAU, Pan-African Union group, when I was out there, and it's just, like, still in contact with them to this day. But it's, like, being a part of that group helped me love myself even more because, like, so many, they were just natural. Like, they just come in, like, their hair picked and everything, and I was just like, I wish I could step out the house like that. Like, Jesus, like, let me throw on a head wrap real fast. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, I would say that I've, like, never been more comfortable with myself, and I think it's, so I pay credit to the Bay Area opening my eyes.
Kevin's gonna be like,
but it's so true. I left a scared little girl from Portland, Oregon, not knowing what I was getting myself into, like, you know, only being around a certain kind of community. And I just fell right in, and I fell right into a home where I'm loud and proud, and I'm all good. Like, I'm myself. I don't have to be anybody else.
And I'm trying to get that for my kids, which is hard to do in Portland. But I mean, I want them to have that all the time. It's such a struggle, like, with school in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, I want my kids to go to decent schools. I want them to get a decent education, and all too often, like, the quote-unquote good schools are the white schools, and I don't want to just send them to a white school. You know, it sucks.
And it's crazy that you're in the most liberal and quote-unquote diverse area in Oregon, and yet we're still having this problem.
Right? And it's like, I go to look at schools for my kids, and I'm like, okay, there's, you know, one sort of brown kid in there, but, like, this school has great ratings, and which thing do I want to give up for my kids, and like for me, being around people mm-hmm. who look like you is not something that's worth giving up, you know. Yeah, like right. I'll teach my kids at home if I have to.
We're in Portland public schools. I went to Benson, and Benson was pretty diverse.
Go Knights.
They look out.
Oh my god. Bye. Bye. Yeah.
You really said
they looked out. I did. Rams. I went to Portland Public Schools, but I went to Benson, and if I would have gone to, like, you know, I applied at three different schools. I wanted to go to Grant, Cleveland, or Benson, and I had to do a lottery because the two schools that were in my district were Roosevelt and Jefferson. And of course, my dad went to Jefferson. My dad.
Demos.
Anyways, my dad went to Jeff, and you know, he grew up in that area, but he didn't want me going to school to Jeff. He, you know, but if I had gone to Auckley, it would have been different. He would have had no choice. But to my mom and my parents, they did not want me going to Roosevelt or Jeff because they didn't think that the schools had the same opportunities as like Benson or Grant. And those are the school, or like Wilson.
Yeah,
they didn't even want me going to Benson. But I mean, I think Benson was a good choice for me. But altogether, I think like for them, they knew like Roosevelt and Jefferson were more of the rougher areas, and they wanted me to go to a school that had more of a little bit of a wider
field.
Yeah, wider. There you go.
Go ahead.
That's rough. Like I hate that those two things are associated with each other.
Exactly. So, yeah. But I found myself hanging out with all the kids that went, the black kids that went to Grant, and all the kids from Jeff. I have a lot of friends from Jeff. You know, a lot of friends from Jeff, and a lot of friends from Roosevelt. A lot of friends from De La Salle. All black kids. So to me, it was like no matter where they put me, I still found myself trying to, just from doing like extracurricular activities, even in Benson, finding myself to push myself out of my comfort zone and go hang out with people from other schools so that I had that diversity, because I didn't talk to a lot of people at Benson. So
yeah.
I think, you know, no matter where you put your kids in that situation, I think doing extracurricular activities and getting them involved into activities where they're going to be in a more diverse, you know, there's a more diverse opportunity.
And yeah. And education is like super important in my family, you know. I mean, and I went to Catholic school. I'm sure you can speak on that too. And so I have a high standard for education. Yeah. You know, I went to Cleveland for my senior year, and so I really saw the difference in terms of education. And so, like, I want my kids to go to a good school, but
I would say De La Salle gave me a really good, great education. And then even just being exposed to the diversity, there is a lot of different ethnicities at my school, and I think it really prepared me for the real world, because I grew up in Northeast Portland in like the Concordia neighborhood, and it's pretty white it's very white, and even now I'm going back home and I'm like, wow, it is real white up here.
It gave me a really good
outlook on life, and even for school too. I know our valedictorian transferred from Jeff, and he got a full ride to Johns Hopkins.
Oh wow, and I was going to Harvard
Medical School. That's so cool. If your kids ever want to go to De La Salle, like, it's a great program.
De La Salle's a really good school.
I'm gonna just shout them out now.
Oh my gosh.
Well, thanks for the recommendation.
That's the thing, like, though, like, they don't give the black schools the opportunity to show their worth inside the schools. So that's why you guys are not thinking of it as an option, because they don't give the black students an option.
It's like funding is an issue for them. Like, oh, all the Barker schools, they're trying to shut down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Roosevelt get a lot of funding recently?
Roosevelt got a lot of funding. But if you look at Jefferson and Benson themselves, those are two schools that have, you know, always, especially Benson. Benson's always struggled with trying to keep open. And you know, it's a great, and the reason I vouch for Benson is they're a polytechnic high school. Yeah. No other public school, you know, gives opportunities. I mean, they give some opportunities, but the opportunities that Benson gives you, you know, it sucks. And to see, like, they're battling to keep open because it's a lower income school. Yeah. It is a, and you know, they cut programs, they cut their music program,
they're
cut their
take away the sports.
They're trying to take away the sports. Like, yeah. I know John Slaughter, it's definitely a huge tech alumni, has vouched to keep Benson open and is constantly doing, you know, marches and doing whatever he can, but you know, they are really trying to shut down any opportunity of like a somewhat of a good education, or even taking, you know, programs and resources mm-hmm. away for Black kids to even have that opportunity.
Yeah. And well, it sucks. And like Marshall shut down too, which right. is yeah. just, yeah. you know.
And they turned that into the school that they send all the brand new schools. Like Franklin just got a whole new remodel, mm-hmm. yeah. all white school.
Grant's yeah. getting remodeled.
Know, Grant's yeah. getting remodeled, you know, which Grant has a good amount of get Black kids, but at the same time, like the amount of Black kids that are going into Grant's, you know, decreasing every single
yeah.
day.
Yeah. And so, well, and
the amount
and
of privilege in Grant.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And why they shut down Marshall like before another school just blows my mind, because Marshall was like the newest building of mm-hmm. all of the Portland public schools, and like really served an important community that like didn't have anywhere else to go. You know, kids that went to Marshall were being sent to Jefferson and to yeah. Wilson, like, which yeah. is so far away for those kids. And it's like, you know, they wouldn't have shut down Cleveland over Marshall, because Cleveland is where all of, like, you know, the rich white kids
yeah.
go.
True.
Yeah.
That privilege kicked in.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break to listen to an oldie but goodie, Pretty Girl Rock, Carrie mm-hmm. Hilson. So we'll be right back.
It's a little bit scary. Boys wanna marry, looking at my dairy. And you can stare, but if you touch it, I'm a fairy. Pretty as a picture, sweeter than a swisher. Mad cause I'm cuter than the girl that's with you. I don't gotta talk about it, baby, you can see it. But if you won't, I'll be happy to repeat it. My name is Carrie.
Okay, you are here with Queen Talk, and just to catch you up, we are talking about our experiences as Black and brown women growing up in or living in Portland, Oregon, or, you know, on the very outskirts of Portland, Oregon. So we opened some calls up to people. You can still feel free to call at 503-231-8187 and kind of give us some feedback as long as it's appropriate, or ask us any questions. So we're just going to keep on rolling. So I want to ask my guests, how do you see Black and brown women being represented in the media? What messages are these portrayals sending to young Black and brown women? So, like, you know, the movies, TV shows, the music industry, social media.
You're starting to see a lot more. I would say recently I've started to see a lot more Black women coming out as Black, showing their Black excellence, and that they are, you know,
unapologetic.
Unapologetic. It's been so much better recently.
But if you look at, there was an episode of Insecure, if you want to go into that, where, what was her name? What is her name?
Molly.
Yeah. Molly was trying to get a promotion, and she worked in an all-white company, and they weren't going to give her that extra money. And it was, one, she's a woman, two, she's a black woman. So
she works in a law firm with all white males.
With all white males. And so, you know, there's that. There's where it shows you, like, where boundaries hit for black women. Like, you can be, you know, have a great degree, you know, great employee, and you still
but you're still black.
Exactly. Yeah, you still fall a little bit short.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
but I think Insecure is really exposing that and taking it to the next level, and it's going to expose a lot of insecurities, you know, hence Insecure, and a lot of struggles that black women go through. Mm-hmm. But I know that Issa Rae, with her talent and her excellence, she's going to take that to the next level and make sure black women rise up in this series. And so I'm really excited to see that. Yeah. I think Molly's going to do some great things.
Right.
Yeah, and she's got to have it. That was a good show.
Oh, it really exposes, like, the femininity and being beautiful and being black and honing your own experiences.
Yeah. What about the music industry? What do you think about that?
It still needs work.
Yeah, okay.
It still needs work. It's a lot of the... buffoonery, I like to call it.
buffoonery
must end. But I don't see it there yet.
Can you elaborate?
For the women, I feel like, okay, like, yeah, there's Beyonce. Okay.
Oh, she's queen.
Queen, like, but it's like... I mean, other than that, I still feel like, I don't know, I feel like it's still being just watered down. Like, all they care about is the money and the getting the plastic surgeries and the hair and the weaves and everything else. And, like, I feel like it's not the Lauren London.
Lauren London, I was about to say. Lauren Hill, right?
Yeah, it's not the Lauren Hills anymore. Like, I feel like there's
yeah,
barely.
There needs to be more.
Yeah, it's like there's no depth in the music.
It's
like,
more sexualized. Like cultural aware idol, like culturally aware idols. Like, we need people who represent being
women.
Yeah.
But like, okay, just to play, you know, devil's advocate, Lauryn Hill. I mean, if you look at, you know, doo-wop or whatever, you know, like that thing. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at that, she's kind of slut shaming. And that's not really cool. You know, there's a way to, like, there's a way to, like, speak up and be a strong, like, woman and feminist, but also she's saying, you know, like,
right.
I don't know, I wish somebody would pull up the lyrics, but you know what she's saying. She's basically,
win if you ain't right.
Or, like, you know, you can't give it up and expect people to respect you, and it's like, that's not...
That's weird.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that she said, you can't do... What'd you say? What was the verse again?
How are you not gonna win if you're right within?
So I mean, it's fine if you're doing all that, but it's just like, why are you doing it? Like, are you doing it to satisfy the need? Are you doing it, like, what are you doing it for?
But
are you
why
doing
is it
to please
our,
other people?
Yeah, but why is it our place to judge why someone's doing something? You know,
it's
what I
not
mean?
but the thing is, like, you're portraying it upon other people. You're doing that, and it's like you're not having enough clarity behind what you're doing. So I mean, a young kid sees that and they take it for exactly what it is that you're doing and what you're saying. And so they go out and they're doing their own thing, and then they lose themselves because they're doing it because that's what they see on TV, but they're not doing it because they know their self. They're not doing it because it's how they are and deep within, you know?
So this kind of goes to Nicki Minaj's cover that she did. Some people are like, heck yeah, like, she's out there expressing herself and her body and owning it. And then there's people that are saying, okay, well, she's objectifying herself. And she's an African-American woman. So, like, where do you see that playing a role in our community? What is she telling us?
I feel like it's way more negative outweighing the bad when it comes to her music and when it comes to her and how she portrays herself, honestly.
There's like, I think with Nicki, it goes into, like, there's Nicki that is radio Nicki, and then there's Nicki that's sexy Nicki. That I think that's where, that's, you know, like, there's a difference. So you hear more of, like, super bass and stuff on, like, the pop hits, and then there's rapper Nicki who goes into talking about her parts and everything, and talks about her booty and all that. And I think, like, I'm trying to do as well as I can right now.
You're doing good.
But you know, there's it goes into, like, you know, Nicki's gonna do her thing, and if she's gone a long way, and I think. I think where it goes, where I wanted to get into with Nicki is right now on, like, social media, they're talking about how Nicki and Cardi are, like, in this huge battle, and how it goes.
But
into,
they just,
like,
did a song together.
So Cardi B just released her video, and, like, a video that she featured in, like, it was like, what?
A Latin music video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a reggaeton video, like El Modelo or something like that. I like Modelos, so I know that name. The whole thing is, like, Nicki sitting there, like, I'm glad you peeped, because now they're saying that Cardi B is stealing Nicki Minaj's style, the way she looks, because of her blonde hair. They're both from New York, right. Like, you know. And I think what it is, like,
but you're not the first person to wear a wig, right. Like,
right. And Nicki copied what's her name,
So my point with this is that as women, I feel like we shouldn't be in competition. Like, yeah, you guys are in music competition. You guys are, like, supposed to be, you know, trying to get to the top. Whoever's the best
is the
best.
The numbers,
but
yeah.
But at the same time, like, as women, especially as Black women, and from the, even just being in the same, born in the same little area. Just
but we're the cattiest. We're the most drama-fired.
I feel like, and that's what I'm saying, as people. Like, as being Black women in the music industry in general, being the two top artists right now in music itself, I feel like instead of bashing each other and being like, who's better than who, I feel like they should be uplifting each other. They
absolutely.
Should be, you know,
I'm all about
supporting
it.
Each other. And I feel like that's one thing. And I went into this, I feel like as women, we shouldn't be continually doing this batter of, like, light skin versus dark skin, or, like, who's better than who. We're all black, and we all are having the same dream of being somebody. And I feel like that's where we need to go into, you know, supporting each other. Like, we're all here to support Kayla.
We're all here to support our black community.
And I feel like that's something that we should continue to do as not just Black people, but people in general, especially with, like, politics when it comes into this whole Trump thing. We all need to be supporting each other rather than fighting each other.
Well, I think that's
where that music comes into.
Like, in the same way that we need to be celebrating our Blackness, like, I think we need to celebrate our sexuality. Like, women are so often slut-shamed and, like, told to cover up and, like, you know, you can't be proud of who you are, but, like, we are sexual beings, and, like, you know, we should get to celebrate that part of who we are.
And that's what I like about Nicki and Cardi, is they give you that feeling to feel sexy, and that you are,
they're unafraid
unafraid and unapologetic, doing whatever they want to do, because they know, you know, that I think there's two different sides of, you got to look at it from the female perspective and from the male perspective. A male's going to look at it and be like, oh, she's a hoe.
Yeah. And then, like, celebrating who we are as women, like, our bodies, aside from being, you know, sexual things too, you know, like, so I'm a mom, I have 3 kids, and, like, I am actively breastfeeding a baby right now. And, like, there is so much shame around breastfeeding because it's over sexualized, because people are like, oh, it's boobs. Yeah, it's boobs. So, like, you know, you can turn on the TV and see, like, hamburger commercials with girls in bikinis
rubbing
and, like,
the hamburger all
exactly
over themselves,
like mayonnaise, you know. And, like, that's totally cool, but I'm, you know, sitting in the park breastfeeding my son, and people are like, that's gross, you should cover that up.
You're
and
nourishing,
like,
a human.
Exactly. You're like, this is what my body is made to do, and, like, I should be able to celebrate my body, like, in that way of what it's made to do. And then, you know, entirely separate from that, we should be able to celebrate, like, the sexual aspects of our bodies too.
It's like, gotta find that happy medium.
Yeah, we're real sex positive over in my house.
That's good. So I just want to reiterate that people can feel free to call in right now. You can call in with your opinions on how you think that Black and brown women are being represented in the media, positively or negatively. The number is 503-231-8187. So I guess Vanessa was just talking about this, but, like, what are some ways that we can promote positive images of Black and brown women in these spaces? Like, what can we do as consumers, you know, as mothers, sisters, daughters, and friends? Like, what are some things that we can kind of, like, reclaim and, like, do?
I think being mindful of the decisions that you're making is really important, you know, like, because it's way easier than a lot of people think it is to, like, make conscious decisions about the products that you're buying and the places that you're going. You know, like, I just found a new doctor for my kids, and I made sure to find a doctor who was a brown woman because I want my kids to see that brown women are successful. Like, brown women are doctors. And, like, you have a good doctor who's a brown woman.
That because you can be, like, anybody of any, you can do whatever, do what you want to do. No matter what your skin tone, don't let anybody tell you that you cannot be something. Don't.
Exactly.
You know, I think supporting a lot of, you know, local black businesses, doing what you can, you know, don't go over to the top and completely cut off everything.
Right. You know? Yeah, but people need to see that, and kids need to see that. You know, like, say whatever you want about Obama, but, like, Obama is, like, that showed everybody that, like, kids can do whatever they want. And that's so important for kids to see, to have those role models of, like, you know, just because you're black doesn't mean that you can't do anything with your life. Like, you can be the president, you can be a doctor, you can be whatever you want.
Like, you don't always have to be a football or a basketball player. Like, you can do everything else.
I feel like, I don't know, I feel like sometimes, you know, being of color can have its, can have, you know, its opportunities. Like, I know growing up in high school, I went to a Black United Fund, and they were very into helping not just black kids, but kids of any race, you know, minorities in general, get college scholarships, and making sure that you're, you know, getting the help that you need, that, you know, most schools don't hand out that resource for you. Right. You know, there's scholarships for straight just black kids, or what, you know, they have so many scholarships that are offered to you as, you know, just as a minority, and don't, you know, finding just black, you know, Black United Funds and schools, and, like, doing what you can to get out there, and, you know.
And I think having platforms like this to talk about our experiences and to really share, I'm learning so much from all of you ladies, and I'm growing within this conversation, and I'm going to leave with a new mindset of, you know, how we all live our lives and how we can better our lives and better our friends, our families, and, you know, our future babies, because, you know, they are the future, and we're right now in a really hard time. And I think we really need to be honest with ourselves and, like I said, have these conversations, because the more we cover things up and hide it with a blanket, the worse things get. And I think that this is the perfect time to be honest and truthful and understand what we need to do to become better people for the future and for ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. I would also say, like, be mindful of, like, you know, who you choose in a partner, just making sure that that person, like, supports you holistically and, like, uplifts you, and, like, you know, whether it's black love or interracial love or whatever love, like, just making sure that that person understands your identity and supports that, and, like, asks questions, and, you know, just is there to fully, like, be a partner. And also just, like, your friendships, like, making sure that you have, like, positive people around you. And, like, I'm not always the most positive person, but that's why I make sure my friends are, because, like, when I'm in that, like, really nasty negative space, like, I have people being like, you're being dramatic, you're being a drama queen, stop being so negative. You know, shout out to everyone that's here. And, like, even though Alicia probably doesn't want to speak on it, like, we got into it, like,
we've gone into it multiple times.
We're very similar in some ways.
We are literally, like, I would say me and Michaela are the same person in a way. Yeah. And, but, like, when it comes to sassiness, but, like, we stick up for ourselves and we don't take crap from anybody. We know what we deserve, and we know, like, we are good people, and we just want to be treated the way that we deserve to be treated.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't.
And I think every person needs that friend that will stand up for themselves and won't take that mess, you know? And
Yeah,
I have two, you know? Like, what more
and,
do you need?
And when you're talking about picking partners, like, especially if you're picking someone who's going to father your children, like, that is just so important, you know? Like, I feel like one of the best accomplishments in my life is that I'm raising good people who are going to be, like, good members of society. And that, like, you know, I'm going to raise boys who know how to treat women. And I wouldn't be able to do that if they didn't have a dad who knew how to treat women.
I love feminist men.
Right.
The best.
Yeah.
They really are.
And like truly feminist men, not right. men who think they're feminists, because I know a number of those, don't need to name any names, but like men who really, really, truly are feminists, shout out to you. You're some of my favorite people.
I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
So I don't know, me personally, I know my mom's side of the family is Peruvian. Like her parents are both full Peruvian, born in Peru. And they don't necessarily always accept black people. Like when my mom mm-hmm. first started dating my dad, it was an issue. And for me, it's like, how do you go if like, how's your family, your husband's family react to, you know, being in an entourage? Or like
they, even just they have grown a lot. Mm-hmm. So my husband's mom like was, you know, low key pretty racist back in the day. Yeah, yeah. But she had to stop being racist because she has, you know, grandkids who are who are not Mexican, and she just loves them to pieces. And you know, now she works with lots of people of color, and like she
forcing it on them.
Yeah, like, and I think that's kind of what you have to do to people. You just have to like throw it in their face and be like, "Hey, we're people, and we're all wonderful." And she couldn't, you know, she couldn't stick with the mindset that her parents and grandparents had when she had all of these wonderful people that had to be in her life. You know, she couldn't avoid her coworkers or her grandkids.
Yeah. No, my grandparents love me to death, but you know, it's still the struggle of like I feel uncomfortable bringing my boyfriend around, or like, you know, talking about my dad or anything like. But I just, you know, I think that's always important, is having family that supports you mm-hmm. and, you know, regardless of whatever they're, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's one thing is having.
Yeah. I always thought that was hard, like having so many other types of brown people like be so racist and prejudiced towards
each
black
other.
People. Yeah. And even mm-hmm. each other. It's just like, honestly, like even the Hispanics and the Peruvian, like we're all. They're all black, period. Like, I'm sorry, Puerto Rico had to find out the hard way that they were black. So, I mean, like...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I agree. I just feel like... it's just internalized racism, but I feel like we could just, like, spin off. And we only have a few minutes, so I want to get this last round in before we wrap it up. So, So I just want to ask you, what's your favorite thing about being a black or brown woman, maybe in like one word, two words? Anybody can start.
One word or two words, man.
Yeah.
I'll go back with saying, I mean, there's a lot of things I love about being black, but we touched on it earlier. I love my hair. I love that I can do anything with it. I love that it's forever going to be curly and that I can braid it up. I can have it straight, I can have it wavy, I can do what I want with it, and I love that I'm just blessed with that.
I think I love being blessed with the great community of black people. Like it's love everywhere, regardless. I feel like with my family in general, you know, you always have, the black community has like a tight love for one, you know, for each other most of the time, good majority of the time, and you will always have that, you know. We're not, it's pretty rare when people in Portland of color really turn on each other.
Right.
Females especially. You know?
Yeah, way too quickly.
I mean, that's a gray area, I guess.
wait. Let me just get this straight. You just said it's rare when the
females in general, like,
turn on each other, or are you saying the opposite?
Opposite.
Okay, yeah.
We turn on each other a lot, but all I'm saying, like, as black women in general, like, I feel like a lot of us, you know, we try to help each other as much as we can, I guess. Yeah. I like being able to have that community and being able
to... The smart ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite thing about being a black woman is, like, you know, kind of to steal your thought there, is, you know, like, not just my hair, but the whole body that comes with being a black woman. You know, like, being a mom is really important to me. It's, like, you know, part of my core identity, and like I wouldn't be able to birth these children so easily without these big old hips that I got, you know? And, like, that's where that comes from.
Well, kind of like what everybody said, all into one, like the hair, the body. I just love it all, like the whole experience of being a black woman. There's no other,
there's nothing normal about us. Like, we are excellent and beautiful.
The fact that like we can produce like every shade, like, and all that just fun stuff, that's awesome.
And Kayla, I want to hear from you, what's your favorite part?
I think just like the confidence. But thank you all for tuning in. Thanks. I'm sorry we had to cut short.
Thank you
so much for being here.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Cardi B, you know where I'm at, you know where I be. You in the club, just to party, I'm there, I get paid a fee. I be in and out them bands so much, I know they tired of me. Honestly, don't give a f*** about who in front of me. Drop 2 mixtapes in 6 months, we're breaking as hard as me. I don't bother with these hippies, don't let these bother me. They see pictures, they say goals, I'm who they tryna be. Look, I might just chill in some babe, I might just chill with your boo.